You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into the Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. There's a lot to get to today. We'll do our first ever mailbag. Hopefully this is a tradition we can carry on and that you guys enjoy. I'm really excited. You guys responded to me on Twitter with some questions you have about the team and what I'm thinking about them. So it's going to be really fun to run through those and see what you guys think of my answers. As always, you can yell at me on Twitter for those at TEastNBA or follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. But we also have some fun stuff. Oladipo being injured is not fun, but I got some quotes. I went to practice today and got some quotes from Coach McMillan, Nate McMillan, and Victor Oladipo himself about the injury that I can share with you guys. And then I also got some comments from Nate McMillan about, you know, the slow starts in these games and potentially changing some lineups if Oladipo's not able to come back. So really jam-packed and fun episode with a lot of good content for you guys. We really hope you enjoyed this one, but I think the place to start is obviously the Oladipo injury. So it's not a secret, the team is on a losing streak without Victor Oladipo. They need him to come back, hopefully, so they can right the ship on this four-game winning streak. And fans are wondering if he's going to play Saturday against the Bulls. Well, let's hear what he had to say. Someone asked Oladipo a different question, something along the lines of, you know, what does it say about the team if they can right the ship? And you can tell he was so itching to play that he sneaked a hint about if he would play on Saturday into his answer. So just take a listen.
Is how this team bounces back from a streak like this a sign of what you guys really have here?
I guess so. But at the end of the day, we just got to focus on one day at a time, one game at a time. Going out there and bringing that pace to the game, our pace, that pace of basketball to the game. So I'm looking forward to Saturday. It feels like I ain't played forever. So
if you didn't catch that because it was quiet because I was holding my phone a little too far away, it was one of my first times, he said he's excited for Saturday and it feels like he hasn't played in forever. So that makes me slightly optimistic that he thinks that he will be playing. And let's hear what Coach McMillan had to say about his availability and how practice went for Oladipo today as well.
Well, he went through practice today and we'll see how he feels tomorrow. He'll go through another practice tomorrow and we'll make a decision. Sure, before game time on Saturday.
How did you look at practice today?
He was okay. You know, he went through practice, full practice, contact practice, which he hadn't done in the last week or so.
I noticed he had a gray shirt on. Did he not run with the starters?
We mixed it up.
So as you heard there, McMillan said that they think they're going to make a decision for game time on Saturday. However, the fact that he went through full contact practice and he said he was excited to play or felt like he hasn't played in forever, you know, all these signs to me point to him, you know, writing his injury up enough that he's going to go Saturday. So I am optimistic that you will see Victor Oladipo on Saturday. But if you don't, I think something else that's been noteworthy to talk about is the team's had a ton of slow starts, and I mean really slow starts recently. They've just been getting blown off the court in these first quarters, and you know everyone else was just as curious about that as me. So Nate McMillan was asked about that, and here's what he had to say about the slow starts.
You guys have been trying a lot of things to figure out these slow starts and how to remedy that. Do you feel like you're getting any closer?
Well, I thought we had a good practice today. You know, we talked about that, you know, getting off to these slow starts. You know, it definitely is starting on the defensive end of the floor. You know, offensively, we haven't scored. And a lot of times, you know, guys feel good about themselves and they start to play defense when the ball goes in the hole. But, you know, we can't wait on that. You know, we got to get off to better starts. It's been a challenge to the entire team, you know, to work harder at that, be more connected, more focused defensively as well as offensively execution. And if we're not getting that, then we'll get guys in there that and give them an opportunity to get that
done. So you heard him say that they're, you know, considering making changes if things don't start to go right, which is only obviously applicable if Oladipo does not play, but it's still interesting to hear that they've been omnipotent to the problems going on in the starts of these games and that, you know, they have considered changes. And, you know, something else I thought was interesting that he mentioned there was just that, you know, guys try harder on defense when the ball's going in the basket, and maybe that's just the simple solution to all the problems. You know, the shots start falling and the guys start trying harder on defense and suddenly the ship is righted. But, you know, there's a chance Oladipo, it sounds like at least, he'll be back Saturday and that'll fix everything. Hopefully, you know, the offense might be humming again and the defense might be humming again. So Really good answer there from Nate. He gave us a lot to work with, and you know, we might be seeing some changes if Oladipo doesn't play, and obviously if he does, we'll be seeing the old Pacers. But one other thing I saw at practice was Glenn Robinson putting up some jumpers. He didn't have quite the lift that he had on his jumper when last season, but obviously when you have a severe ankle injury, you're not going to be able to jump as high after it. So, you know, and obviously he's not playing yet, so maybe he's working that back in. But he was nailing some corner threes, so good to see that from Glenn Robinson. Hopefully his return will be in the next couple of weeks. But I think it is time for me to transition into the mailbag. So all these questions are from Twitter, so let's just get right into it. All right, so the first question is from Gage Bridgeford at G Bridgeford NFL. One of my college friends, actually, Gage, who should take the NFL out of his Twitter handle because he writes about basketball too. But he said, what are EK and Leaf's ceilings? So EK Anibogu and TJ Leaf, the two Pacers rookies, he wants to know, or two of the three Pacers rookies, excuse me, he wants to know what I think their ceilings are. That's really hard to say for EK because we haven't seen a ton of him, and the injury kind of changes my answer on him more than it should have. Mike Schmitz of Draft Express really liked EK before the draft, like put him 20th, I think, overall on his big board. And I liked EK too just because he fits that modern center kind of mold of, you know, really bouncy, really good defender and shot blocker who can, you know, deter guys from the paint. And he hasn't had a ton of opportunity to show anything yet, but, you know, he's that kind of player. Like, his absolute peak would be like DeAndre Jordan, but I don't think he'll ever quite reach that precipice of player, you know, that Clint Capella mold. But, you know, maybe like a Clint Capella light would be his ceiling. You know, just a guy who can really run the floor. He's pretty athletic. A guy who can get up for lobs, play really good defense. You know, he'd fit next to a guy like Oladipo perfectly, who's really fast and can throw up those kind of lobs. So I'd be looking for something like that for EK's ceiling. Obviously, you know, that's something that could not work out just because it's such a tough mold to fit. There's not a lot of guys in it. But, you know, the early signs show that he can make those kind of plays. As for Leaf, you know, he's in the Ryan Anderson mold at the moment of can't play a lick of defense, but excellent offensive player, can really shoot the ball. But what he has that Ryan Anderson doesn't is he can dribble and attack. He could really do it in college, and he's kind of shown it a bit in the NBA. He's shown a bit of good anticipation on rebounds. He's kind of reminding me of Tobias Harris with a little worse defense. So, you know, maybe some player of that mold at some point, which would be another, you know, really useful player. That kind of shooting four who can take guys off the dribble is kind of rare, and guys with that skill, if they could play defense, are just like some of the best players in the league. So maybe Leaf's defense comes around and his offense, you know, gets more rigid. He's a real player, but you know the defense is not there at all. So that would be the next step for him for sure. But yeah, that Tobias Harris sort of mold is what stands out in my head. I'm struggling to think of other guys in this kind of realm, but you know, maybe following that career path without going through Orlando would be what I would like to see from Leaf. So our second question comes from one of our biggest fans, the first guy who ever tweeted at our Twitter account, Jordan Brandenburg at JBGuitar2196. He tweeted at me and said, curious if you think Corey Joseph could have a bigger role this year and if he could be a potential starter next year if Collison isn't brought back. The second question I'll have to, it takes more detail, so I'll get to that one second, but do I think he should have a bigger role this year? Absolutely. I love Corey Joseph for his ability to both, you know, play one and two guard. He can guard both. He can play next to both point guards and shooting guards. He's proved that he's a really effective spot up shooter and cutter this season. He doesn't turn the ball over that much. Like, the biggest thing he does poorly is he kind of dribbles the air out of the ball sometimes, and, you know, him and Lance's little on-court beef sometimes are really funny, but I don't really know what his bigger role is because, you know, Collison obviously has to play. He's, you know, the team's best scoring point guard, and Lance has to play some minutes just for his energy that he brings when Oladipo's on the bench, and Oladipo has to play because he's the team's best player. So the guard rotation doesn't have a ton of opportunity for him to get big minutes, but at the same time, you know, like, there's a place for all of those guys, too. So, like, there's a scenario where you want Collison in instead of Joseph, and there's a scenario where you want, you know, Oladipo in at the two guard. So with Joseph, I think he's perfect for a lot of scenarios, but he's never the best guy. So it's harder for him to get more minutes. But, you know, I think that because he's good in so many scenarios, he should continue to get a high amount of minutes. As for being a potential starter next year if Collison isn't brought back, sure, that'd be great. You know, he's got that player option. So this is where this has a lot of layers. One is that Collison has a team option, and two is that Joseph has a player option. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens and what decisions are made there. I know that, you know, people on Twitter, I don't agree with this necessarily, are talking about the possibility of trading Darren Collison. Maybe, I guess, that's something for later. I won't give an opinion on that right now. But if he's traded, obviously he'd start now. But, you know, next year, who really knows what the point guard situation is going to be. But if Joseph is back and Collison isn't, sure, I'd love to see him as the starter. He's done, you know, just as well as him this year, so that makes a lot of sense. And I think that, you know, because of his age, too, I think he'll be 27 or 8 in the offseason next year versus Collison being 31 or 32. You got to think that they'd be more likely to re-sign Corey Joseph, especially because they have his bird rights, and bring him back long-term. So it does make a lot of sense to think that could be something that happens next year, and that's a really good question. You know, the point guard position is the most murky one for the future, so very, very, very interesting to see how that goes. Good question, Jordan. The third one from another one of my college friends, Quinn, who was on for the Mavs preview, Quinn and Tonic, tweets and says, is the Chinese translation of Pacers most accurate representation of this team? So for those of you that don't know, the Mavericks just changed their Chinese affiliate, whatever league team name. I don't know what these are for. I think it's for esports, but I'm not actually sure. And it's something like the Wild Horses. And it turns out the Pacers team name is the Pedestrians. So their team name, the Pacers team name in China is the Pedestrians, which he asks if that's the most Pacers thing ever. It is not. The Pacers are cool, and that is a bad team name. So the Pacers being called the Pedestrian, I know he's making fun of me with his question, but it was still pretty funny. But yes, the Pacers are called the Pedestrians in China, for those of you that don't know, which is a pretty big joke of a name. But yeah, that's all we'll do for that one. The next question is from Pacers All Day is his name. He is at Nick Stidham 31, so I guess I should have just said Nick. He says, this is a long question, what are your thoughts on Vic moving to point guard and using Glenn and Lance at the two, Kojo backing up Vic and getting minutes with Vic as the two, and then hoping the DC stays motivated and a Pacer for a long time? At least he's prospering next to Vic. I don't know if he'll be replaced with Vic when he becomes a franchise point guard in this scenario. That's a lot to take in, so I'll just dissect these questions one at a time. Moving Vic to the point guard and using Glenn and Lance at the two, obviously a great idea to use Vic at whatever position you can, just because he's been so effective in any role this year. But I don't know if you ever want to take away Darren Collison's minutes. He's been fine this year. Maybe at some point in the future, Oladipo, full-time point guard, sure, this year. Maybe not, you know. It's fine in a small ball scenario as well. You know, you can get three wings out there, so it's definitely something I'd explore doing in spurts, but maybe not as like a permanent thing I would like to do. But it's definitely a good idea, you know, in short spurts for a few lineups. I'm actually writing about small ball stuff later. Corey Joseph backing up Vic and also getting minutes with Vic at the two, that's kind of what happens now. But if I'm assuming this question follows up the first one, you know, if that was the case, you're talking Collison being off the team. Maybe I read your last question wrong. But yeah, if Collison is gone and Vic replaces him as the franchise point guard, so that's exactly what the question said. I read it wrong the first time. Then yeah, Corey Joseph would be the backup, and he could play one alongside Vic at the two. So, you know, that'd be a good guard rotation that would shake out if Collison was to leave. I think a lot of Pacers fans would like to see Oladipo, Glenn Robinson, and Lance all starting. So that would be a really, really exciting group. You know, we'll just have to see how Glenn Robinson's able to play when he returns from injury. And if there's enough time to evaluate him, maybe they can make a decision on Collison that gives Robinson some more playing time. The next question is from Joe Betts. I think this is the last question. No, it is not. It's the second last question from Joe Betts. I think he writes for iPacers blog. I believe that is correct. So, hey, Joe, what's up? His question is, what is more important at the trade deadline, acquiring young assets, in parentheses, picks or young players under 22, and then that guarantee more short-term losses, or maintaining roster flexibility with current contracts for potential draft night deals? Both are good options, so it's really hard to say, but I think acquiring assets at the trade deadline would be mostly possible. Like so the trick with Bogdanovich is, I don't know where his value lies in more, because if you trade for him at the trade deadline, it's that you want his contributions the rest of the season on your team. And if you trade for him at the draft, it's clearly a cap-cutting move, because you'd want to just waive him and his partially guaranteed money in the offseason. So it's pretty much what has more value to teams. You know, getting off of some money, or, you know, having a guy for the stretch run. And for the Pacers, the interesting part there is, you know, teams that are getting off money and teams that are really good and want to add a guy for the stretch run are both good teams, right? So that's not like you're getting a great asset in either scenario for those guys. I think you could probably get the better asset from teams mid-season just because, like, teams will trade away their first-round pick at the deadline unless teams will have them at the draft. And cap-cutting moves don't really happen until, like, teams know that they're going to get a guy if they make the cap-cutting move. So draft trades, like, the only cap-cutting draft trade this year was that Portland kind of, you know, traded two picks for one so end up, you know, moving some money around later with Crab, and, you know, that's just how that worked. And there wasn't a ton of it this year, but or last year, but I think there could be more this year just because there'll be less teams with space. So that's a really hard question to answer. I don't actually know what's better. More important to me, absolutely, for the Pacers is acquiring picks for younger players. I think they're going to have a ton of cap space either way, so it's not, you know, that important how they get to that space. What matters is that they use it effectively. And if using it effectively means taking on some money to acquire more assets and get more young players, then I'm all for it, especially considering, you know, the best three or four players on this team are all under 25. I think the importance should lie in, you know, getting guys that are young and being able to pick guys that you find are young. So that's a really tough question, though, about the timing. I like that one, Joe. I'll have to think more about that at some point. The last question is from Morgan Webster, at Morgan J. Webster. Sorry, Joe, I forgot to say your at. It's at @Joe_Betts_. Morgan J. Webster asks, why are the Pacers very bad when Victor Oladipo isn't on the court, and should he be in the MVP convo strictly based on the fact that the Pacers cannot win without him? I just wrote about this. You know, last year, Russell Westbrook's one of his big claim to fame is that, you know, his on-off splits were crazy, and the team was 12.2 points better per 100 possessions when Russell Westbrook played. The Pacers are currently 12 points per 100 possessions better when Victor plays than when he doesn't. So, you know, it's very, very clear that his impact is almost as big as Russ's MVP season. So when you look at that, you got to say, okay, maybe. But, you know, his stats are mostly points and defense. He's not as much of a, you know, he passes a lot, obviously. We all see it. A lot of hockey assists, too. A lot of unquantifiable things where, you know, there's some other guys who like LeBron and Harden who have more impact than Oladipo. But, you know, he's probably getting close to the top 10 just narrative and impact-wise in the MVP race. But I don't think he's number – I think there's a lot of reasons, and you as a listener and we as Pacers fans who watch the team more would definitely rate him higher than guys who cover the league nationally. And that's at no fault to them. It's just harder for them to watch a ton of games and see his true impact night in and night out. But, you know, I think he's in that top 15 to 10 range in the MVP conversation, and given his on-off splits, you know, you got to take him seriously. In some capacity, you know, Russ had the triple-double narrative, too, and the clutch scoring. So, you know, Oladipo's got the clutch scoring, too. So if he was snagging triple-doubles, he would be MVP for sure, but he's not. But, you know, he's definitely up high in that stratosphere, and he's proven that, you know, because the team is so struggles so mightily without him and can win, you know, against some really good teams, you know, Spurs, Cavs, etc. when he plays, you know, he's a really good player and maybe one of the most valuable in the league. So, you know, that's a good question. He's definitely up high in that. I'm assuming he might get a few votes, you know, in the fourth and fifth range when the season comes to the end. So good questions for everyone today. Hope you enjoyed this mailbag. Hopefully this is a tradition we can carry on. I'm glad you guys responded on Twitter. As always, you can follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at T East NBA. You can follow Adam, who was not on this episode because he's on vacation, at Friedman Adam 5. We hope you enjoy the Bulls game coming up this weekend. We'll have a recap for it next week, as well as a week preview next week. Have a great and safe weekend, and go Pacers!